Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guests today are from a show that I first discovered the playwright doing a show a couple of years ago, and they were such unique piece of theater that when I saw that Emily Schwartz has a new play out, I had to see it. And in 04, I saw The Dastardly Ficus and other comedic tales of woe and misery. And the young lady is back again with a play called Funeral Wedding, the Alvey play. And with her, we also have the star of the show, who is Matthew Holzfeind. And hello, Emily.
Hello, Tom.
Now, you got it. How do you come up with these wacky, quacky, murder mystery, comedy, something so totally different?
I write things that I find interesting. And I guess that I've always liked Edward Gorey. I've always liked Charles Adams. I like ghost stories and haunted houses and campfires and unexpected strange things in jars. And well, so that's kind of how I come upon.
And you don't know how refreshing it is to have a new voice. I mean, the Dastardly Ficus, just give us a little overview of what that was about, because I thought that you had the two sisters there that were stone crazy.
The Dastardly Ficus was basically about the Derbyshire sisters, and they lived together in their old house out in the country. And, I mean, it started off with a small play called Entertaining Mr. Topps, where one of the sisters found a severed head in the lake, and she brought it back to the house and wrapped it up like a present and wanted to marry it. And so they took off from there, and nothing was impossible after that first short little 10-minute play.
So. And it emerged to be a terrific find.
Thank you.
And then we didn't hear from you for a while. And then when Scott Drake called me, he didn't register. He said, you saw our play before. And, you know, I see. And then when he reminded me of the Dastardly Ficus, I said, oh, okay, I'm there.
Great. That's what I like to hear.
And your new play is terrific.
Thank you very much.
Now, let's say hello to the star of the play.
Oh, shucks.
Okay. And Matthew, what you did to deliver that all those early scenes in Funeral Wedding, because it's really your play, it's the Alvin play. And did she create a good character for you?
Just amazing. It's I don't know if it's cliche or not, but I mean, it was just so easy to do following her roadmap that she made for the character, because he's such a unique and interesting individual. And
well, tell us about Alvin.
Let's see. What should I say about Alvin? The first thing that comes to my mind when I think of him is his sensitivity, his absolute and utter sensitivity to his world and how it's been shaped and how it's kind of affected him and has made him kind of, you know, he's had experiences in his life through, you know, people outside his family and people inside his family that have kind of made him a little, you know, different than other people. And because of that, he is kind of taken that. And
well, your performance set it all up, because amazingly and nicely, you break the fourth wall by talking right to us.
Right.
And you've got 4 or 5 minutes to win us over. Mm-hmm. And you do it with a lot of charm, with a lot of vulnerability and a lot of honesty. And let me ask you, Emily, if that's how you designed the character, I mean, did you realize that we had to buy him?
Yeah. Oh, immediately. Yeah. If you didn't like Alvin within the first 5 minutes, then you certainly wouldn't like the rest of the play, because it all builds on him. You have to trust him as the person to lead you through this terrible, strange story. There's a lot of information that he gives you right at first. And it's just basically, that's what I wanted. I wanted you to be able to get to know the character and feel comfortable enough with this person, so that when all these weird, odd other characters come on, you have a sort of a base in
Alvin. So he's really kind of neurotic, isn't he?
He's very neurotic.
Yeah, and he's got a secret.
He does have a secret, and I think that his neurosis is kind of charming, though. So he's not overwhelming.
Or let me ask you about you have two directors.
Yes.
And you were involved, since it's your play and this is a premiere, correct?
Yes, it is.
Tell us about how your involvement. Where the give and take? Did you pick Matthew? Did you have to?
Well, it was
agree,
a lot of. Or? Yeah, it was definitely a team decision. Matt came in and when he left the room from his first audition, we thought, he's wonderful. He's got the humor of it. He's got the sensitivity of it. And then it was the same with all the casting. It was a big discussion for him. And I think we'd set up perimeters and then narrow it down until we all came to a consensus. So.
Well, I think you made the right decision there.
I do,
but,
too.
Let me ask you, too, about having the vaudevillian player. How did that work? I thought it was a nice little touch.
Yeah, I wanted something, since the characters do talk directly to the audience, I wanted a kind of like a balancing point for them, too, with that character. So he can relate to the characters on stage, and then he can be with the audience and watch. So he's sort of drifting in between the actual world and the world of the play at all times. So that's sort of why I envisioned him. And plus, for just humor, he's a funny guy.
Yes. Now, Matthew, let me ask you this. Besides conveying the emotions, you really go through the whole emotional range.
Yeah.
This is a real physical role. I mean, you're bouncing off the ground and getting thrown around and
yeah.
falling down. And
mm-hmm. It's a workout. I remember the first time we ran that first act, because the first act is a little longer than the second, and it's pretty much, you know, my journey to that huge climax at the end, and I was on the ground like panting. It was pretty, and then, you know, we've kind of gotten emotionally and physically adept to it. But yeah, it's a workout.
Well, give us a little bit without giving away the main plot twist, as I did in my review. I think the show has got so many unique plot twists to kind of give it away, because it's part mystery.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. is unfair, but. Give us a sense of what he's going through.
Okay. The premise is basically Alvin has locked himself in his attic for a number of years, about, I would say, 5 years or so, ever since a certain point in his life, and that comes to light as the play goes on. And he has developed these... his little home base, I would say, is the attic, and he, you know, can, you know, does certain things up there and is in his own little world, and he's very comfortable up here, but he is, you know, not in his you know, right mind, of course, you know, certainly according to the rest of the
he's
world.
He's sort of in denial of an event that happened.
Right, right.
And his family, right, his sister mm-hmm. and his mother and his father
right.
Are trying to get him back into the mainstream world.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So it's slowly... evolves, the story slowly evolves.
Right.
And I thought the characters you had playing the mother and the father, tell us about those.
Well, it's funny because we don't use age-appropriate actors for those parts. They're young. They work. It's basically the play drifts between the past and the present and the world of Alvin in the attic and the memories that his family has of their youth and other times. So you drift back and you get to see the courting scene between his parents and you get to see his mother when she was younger and with the children and things like that. They all have strange kind of foibles.
I mean, this is the Addams Family meeting the dysfunction.
It is.
You know, making them look normal.
They're a little, yeah, it is. The Addams Family is a little bit kinder, I think. Less monsters.
And it's hard to develop this kind of comedy. I mean, it either works or it doesn't. And Matthew, I think you did a terrific job with it. But the interplay of all the cast, I thought it worked really well.
Everyone got the dialogue, and they picked up on the comedy right away, which is why it was so nice to work with everyone, because they got why it was funny. And the darkness of it, too. There's a serious level underneath all of it, which is why I think the comedy works.
And what I like, too, is that you leave some doubt of what happens. And I think that's good.
There's no clear end. You just sort of have to... roll with it or make up your own mind as to what happens. It's kind of a mystery.
Now, I've got a couple of... Let me ask me a couple of questions. This was kind of debatable, but one of my friends was trying to figure out the relationship of you with the doctor.
Yes.
And with... I mean, I got it that the doctors kind of went after your character and your sister.
Mm.
Would you consider that valid?
Yes, for sure. Robert Elliott, the doctor, played by Les Cruz, was basically a family, a friend, and in the beginning, I had a great relationship with Alvin and a great relationship with everybody, but it has kind of turned sour, at least according to Alvin's point of view, But yes, has gone to courting his sister, which of course makes Alvin livid, which is another yeah. Great thing.
I mean, Emily, what kind of mind must you have to come up with these characters? I mean,
they're kind of horrible, aren't they?
Well, but he's a delicious villain. The
isn't
doctor.
He wonderful?
Yes.
I love him.
Yeah,
he's terrifying in every way, but he's so much fun to watch, at least for me. I love him.
And the cat, I mean, he's got that look of a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you dressed him perfect.
Great.
Now, I guess that the era had to be 20th century, even though it's very much of a Gothic Victorian
yeah.
story. But then when you mentioned cars and all that, so I'm guessing like pre-World War I or maybe 1920s?
The thing is, with the time, yeah. it's all an imaginary time. It's kind of like with Ficus before,
okay.
where I like to set things up in a world where you can recognize that it's the past. It is, you know, it's a time period from the past,
well,
say, but it's for sure an imaginary place. It's an odd world that sort of floats about.
I love the treatment of having the two young girls
yes.
coming under the bed and haunting.
Oh,
that was a nice touch.
The ghosts. I think they're pretty scary.
Yeah, the first time. I mean, Matthew jumped almost out of his... the first time. That was a nice touch. What made you use the rhyme in Act 2?
Well, the rhyme actually came out of sheer frustration for me and the play. And when I was writing it, in the process of writing it, I hit a point where I knew where I wanted to go, I just didn't know how to get there. And I knew the level of fun that I wanted to have with it, but I really didn't know what to do, and so it was about 3 o'clock in the morning one night, and I thought, you know what, play? You don't want to cooperate with me, I'm just going to make you rhyme. And so I started writing the rhyme seed as a joke to myself, and then I realized, I was like, I really like
yeah,
the
worked.
Rhyme scene.
And then,
so,
and then having is Anne her name?
Yes.
And having her answer him in rhyme.
Yeah.
I think it's the only way
that it could make you know that, yeah. that it would roll along with itself. So.
Well, how is the show being received so far?
Really well.
Yeah.
It's going really well. I have been nothing but pleased with the response that we've gotten, and just meeting up with people after the show. And since we've only really had one Monday press preview so far, and this Thursday, you know, tonight, Thursday, is the official opening of the show. So.
Oh, well, that's great. Then,
yeah.
When people be hearing this next week, so you'll had a few shows under your belt.
Great. You should come out. It's great.
Well, Matthew, let's get back to you now. What is your background? I'm trying to remember where I saw you. You did a couple plays for Eclipse Theater.
I did. Right. I did, yes.
What's your background a little bit?
As far as like I've been in town or so?
Yeah.
I've been in town about three and a half years. And
From
graduated from Indiana University. Was born in Dallas, Texas. Kind of came up here and worked a lot with the Looking Glass Theater. They gave me a couple good early shots as an understudy. And then... worked at Eclipse, great theater. Was in two of their shows last year, and just finished up a new musical at Chicago Jewish Theater. And
which one were you in?
The Feathers in the Wind. It's neat. It's always great. It's the third time actually I've worked on a new play. The first time I did it was a musical called Camp Nimrod for Girls. And there's always something cool about working about a new play, but the unknowns multiply, of course, when you're working on a new musical, which, you know, because you've got the new
but musical. What's great about it, if you really land it, you can kind of put a mark on it, which makes it really hard for them to cast anyone but you.
Right.
And
the right of first refusal, Ms. Schwartz.
That's the well, that's what they all try and do in New York. You know, they
right.
try and put their stamp on it, and, mm-hmm. and that's legitimate.
Right.
So how did you get involved with this group?
Well, known Emily for quite a while. We weathered hurricanes last summer together, and so we go back.
Oh, okay.
I knew I wanted to be a part of this production even before I read it, only because I knew I just wanted to work with her and work with all of my good friends. But once I read the show, and I realized how really great and different
yeah.
it is. It's so refreshing.
But it's a tough role for you. I mean,
it is. And I was nervous. I was nervous because I knew I wanted it to be good for her. I knew everyone. See, the thing is, we all went into this rehearsal process, everyone in that room, with the most absolute optimism and like really wanting this to be a really amazing experience and believing that it could be. So there was a lot of high hopes, and I think with that came a lot of, you know, a lot of, you know, maybe a little stress that, you know, that to make it that which, you know, hopefully it has become. But yeah, I mean, I wanted to work, you know, with Emily and the show for a while. So I was glad that she, you know, blessed me with this role.
So Emily, was he your first choice? How
Matt,
did that work?
Yeah, actually he was. There were a lot of good people that came in to read for auditions, but once we saw Matt, and we saw you very early on, because you had some kind of conflicts. We saw you were one of the first people that we saw, and he just stuck with me. And it's funny because Matt, when I was writing the show in my head, I had always thought of the character as shorter, darker hair, little glasses, and Matt.
Oh no, he's got clearly he's not got that. And it's part of it, but I love the thing you talk about weight. And I mean, he's tall and thin. And
you're a beanpole, Matt.
What, 6'1", about what?
6'4".
6'4". Not short at all, Matt.
Not short at all.
Yeah. But he captured everything that I wanted in the character. And I could see the potential of that first read was amazing. And the work that he's done in the show is outstanding. And it's different every night to watch Matt react to certain situations. The play has a life of its own, which makes it so exciting for me. I mean, gosh knows I've seen it at least 100 times already, and I mean, I enjoy watching the performers in the show have fun. And
well, that's unique, because you know there's a lot of playwrights that can't see their show, or they see one, they don't want to go near it again.
I love the show. Makes me happy.
Well, that's good. Let me ask you this now. What are some of the other plays that you've done?
I've worked a lot. Like I said, Ficus has been around the Interact Theater in Los Angeles, did it last year. It's done a couple of festivals. My play, The Handheld Saint, won the Metropolis Performing Arts New Play Contest last year. And then I've done a lot of work. I did Collaboration Sketchbook 5 last year. I'm going to do Sketchbook 6 again this year. With everybody, that was nice. Estrogen Fest. I work with Box Rebellion and Side Projects. So I spend a lot of time in between the larger play, working on festivals and working on smaller pieces and getting to know people and hopefully getting my work seen around town, because I'd love to keep working in Chicago.
So. Have you ever presented any of your plays to like Chicago Dramatist or Russ Tuttero?
Not yet. I
he'd be a good man. I think he'd like your work.
Well, I'll have to pass it along then.
Send him an email. Invite him to the show.
I will. Yeah. Indeed.
But tell us how the rest of the casting went, because I thought it was a pretty strong cast. And generally when, you know, new theater companies, storefront shows, usually there are, you know, one or two good people and it gets a little thin.
Yeah. Well, I'm very fortunate to know so many talented actors. And in the process of writing the play, I had several readings of the play. And a lot of the actors, and basically all the actresses that were at the readings, time after time after time, ended up getting cast in the show just because they had seen these characters develop. They had developed these parts. They had read it time and time again. And as well as the actors in the show, they'd done readings. And basically everyone... we picked the cast because they worked so well together as a unit. And I don't want to put somebody up on stage that I'm not completely proud of. I'm completely proud of everyone in this show. So I think they're rock solid.
Well, Matthew, I got to ask you, I thought you had excellent chemistry with the young lady who played Anne.
Carol Enoch.
Yeah. Carol Enoch, right?
Yes.
I thought she was strong in it.
She, didn't she?
Yeah, yeah. How do you prepare when you have to put so much of your energy out early in the show, because I think you set the tone.
Yeah, it's a big. I mean, it's a big jump, especially, you know, because you start out, you know, talking directly to the audience, and you do have to. I mean, give them a cause to like you, and luckily the last show I did with Eclipse, the Italian son, I had my same thing. I walked right out to the audience and spoke a huge monologue to him. And I think there's something to the effect when you break that fourth wall immediately, you do have to, you know, give a case for yourself so they'll be with you. Otherwise, they might get turned off.
And you have to be vulnerable. And I think you did that a lot, and people could feel it.
Yeah.
It works in the small theater doing that. And I think it's a testimony to you putting your stamp on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And to, I think, some pretty darn good writing and some good staging. Who did the sets? I mean, the set was terrific,
too. Oh, yeah.
Too.
Tell them about Chris.
The set is done by Chris Stengrevix, and he's new to Chicago by way of New York. Wonderful. And he was wonderful to work with. He came in. We were talking to a couple different people for set design, and we had a few really good, solid options. And there was this one new guy who wanted to come in and make a case for why he should do the set, and he basically brought in the world with him. He had the drawing and a model, and his set was pretty much what I had envisioned in my head just from the initial drawing, and so I knew that
great.
It was him. And he's fantastic.
I mean, it looks like an attic. And then over in the corner, they have this big tree.
The tree.
And at first, I couldn't figure out what the tree, but then I saw how you use the tree to actually create another scene and to let people come in and out. And I thought that worked rather well.
Thanks. Yeah, he didn't really know how to make the tree at first. That was one of our dilemmas. He's like, I've never made a tree, but it will happen. That's what I liked about Chris. He's like, don't worry about it. It'll happen. And then there was a tree.
Well, too many times in small budget productions, the set is overlooked.
Right.
But you guys did a nice job on
it's
this.
The world.
Yeah.
It's I want people to be able to come into the space and enjoy it right away before the actors get on stage. I want there to be a plethora of things to look at. I think that he did.
Plus, Matthew, you actually are on
stage
before the show starts.
Yeah. Well, the conceit, and this isn't giving anything away. The conceit of it is that the audience has been invited by Alvin to his attic so he can talk, because you know it's a little weird that he's been up in his attic for so long, and the people that he's talked to, the professional people, have told him that it is quite all right to talk to people. Maybe the fact that if he does, then it will maybe help him out. So these are his guests. So you're walking, when you walk into theater, you're walking into his room, and we've tried to make that as comfortable as possible.
Yeah, and that comes across. It doesn't take too long before you start seeing it. And I love that everybody that makes an entrance reacts to the audience. So that's a nice little touch. So if they don't get it the first time, by about the second or third person that comes then they're starting to get it.
Right.
And that's, you know, to be able to maintain that is hard, and I think audiences really like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the fourth wall is an old myth, and so it was a good decision to do that.
Yeah, the one thing I like about Emily's work is that it really is highly dramatic, and like it really is highly theatrical. And you couldn't do this and there's so many players that try to write screenplays these days. You know, it's like, what are you trying to do? And like, she writes for the theater. And that's what's so good about this show. It's like, couldn't do this as a movie. This is a theater. This is an audience relationship.
You're right about that, and how we hate these scripts that are really screenplays. And they have 20 blackouts, you know, the 30-second scene and the 20-second black where they move the furniture. That is so annoying.
Yeah.
And it is purely a play.
It is.
And
it's
that's what
so
makes
great.
It work. Yeah. That's what
it's
makes
kind
it
of a play that knows it's a play.
So yeah, and
that's
poking
kind of
fun at itself.
Yeah, that's what I love. I love making theater, and I think that this is exactly what it is. You come in, come to enjoy it. It's not uncomfortable. There's no weird audience participation. You're just, you know, it's just you're involved and you're in a space. It's an atmosphere. It's an environment. It's
fun.
You
can also have younger people. How young do you think could handle the show?
Well, it's going to be a choice, a parental choice, because there's nothing. I mean, there's violent aspects to it, but it's not. It's hard to say. It's a violent story told in rhyme. So
macabre humor and
it's a
hybrid. Yeah,
it is. It's kind of like if you like Grimm's fairy tales. Sort of.
Okay.
You know, if you
so
don't mind
12, 13,
the ghosts of little girls.
Yeah.
You know, it's 12, 13. I think that it would be good for that age group. But there's nothing.
And it's got no bad language in it, too.
No.
You know, I'm so tired of that. And usually that's a sign of a lazy playwright.
Yeah.
You know, Mamet and Albie can make it work maybe, but some of the rest of them they have their quota of cuss words in a show, and it's just nice to see a show.
I think you can get your point across
with,
you know, in a much more interesting way sometimes. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. In the show, it wouldn't have fit in at all. So, but the language, reading it over and over again and making a specific choice to have it accessible at least to everyone. So hopefully it won't offend the ear.
Matthew, you have some really funny stuff going on there.
Yes, well, I don't know about cuss words, but I do say ignorant sodhead, so.
Well, we'll let you do that. So what's the future going to be for you now? What do you
for me?
Yeah.
Nothing on the horizon as of yet.
I got a feeling, though, that you're going to, this show is going to help you quite a bit, because people who don't know who you are, they come see the show, they'll know.
Well, I'm flattered, Tom. That's nice.
No, I mean, really.
This is Chicago theater. I mean, that's why I'm here, and that's why we're here, and that's why, you know, I want to stay as long as I can, because, I mean, opportunities like this just don't happen.
And they're not happening in New York. They're not happening in Toronto anymore. As Chris Jones has pointed out in several articles, it's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, I believe, you know, I totally believe that.
All right.
So are you planning on getting this published and getting it around so other people can do this show around the country?
That's my long-term plan, okay. Yeah. I know that with Interact in L.A., when they did Ficus, some of the girls from that are coming to see this show. They did a reading of Funeral Wedding out there already. So they might hopefully put it on in Los Angeles. But my main goal is to get it published and eventually spread it around.
Well, you keep it going, and that'll happen. All right, let's give a little promo for the show, where it's at, to call, and what days you're showing.
Oh, that is at the Athenaeum Theater Studio 2, 2936 North Southport. Second floor studio, yeah. You can call Ticketmaster for tickets or come straight to the box office. We have Industry on Thursday and Sunday for $12, and that's senior discount too. And then regular tickets are $15.
Which is quite a bargain.
Yeah,
I mean, it really is.
We wanted to keep it low. We discussed ticket prices, and I want to keep it within reach so that we can get as many people in here to see it as possible, because there's some great work going on.
And it runs through when?
It runs through the 17th of June, so...
Any chance for an extension?
There might be. Hopefully, we'll need one, but I can't say as of yet.
Okay. So the show is Funeral Wedding, the Alvin play.
The Alvin play.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom.
This is Tom Williams, and go see a play this week.